Boker Tov, Modim Simcha. Thank everybody for coming. It's a busy time of year. As we start class number 52, I guess that makes 1 year. Baruch Hashem, we've actually had 54 classes, but one was on Perkei Avot, one was on the Pesach Haggadah. So in terms of the Seder, quote unquote, we're up to class 52. So I really want to thank you for, I say all the time, but it's really, Sukkot is a time of Thanksgiving. So, for forcing me to prepare for these shiurim where I have gained, so much. And if you gained a little bit, that's an extra bonus. Okay. As I mentioned, we will, and I put in the email, we'll talk today on Tfilat Geshem. And it's a beautiful tefillah. I imagine it's one that people don't spend too much time reviewing. And we'll start off by just spending a few minutes talking about rain. So, of course, I think is relatively well known. The Mishnah, the second Mishnah in Masechet Rosh Hashanah teaches that there are four times of judgment. Nisan, or Pesach al Tfuah, we're judged for the wheat on Pesach. That's why we bring the Korban Omer of the barley. And we're judged for the fruit on Shavuot. That's why we bring a Bikurim or Shtei HaLechem. Really, wheat is considered in the Bible a fruit. And then on Rosh Hashanah, Kol Ba'ei Olam Ovrim Lefanav Kivnei Maron. On Rosh Hashanah, the entire world, Kol Ba'ei Olam, everybody who comes into this earth, whether Jew or not Jew, passes before God, let's say, different explanations. Give name a room. Let's say the one that people like to use, like a sheep one by one. Ubachag nidonim al hamayim. And on Chag, we discuss Sukkot is the holiday par excellence. We're judged on water. Now, of course, of the four, we tend to think that Rosh Hashanah is the most important. That's when we're judged. And that's when our tefillot, Rosh Hashanah Yikatevun, our tefillot really focus on judgment very much. Rosh Hashanah, by the way, Yom Kippur is not a day of judgment anywhere in the Mishnah. It's only Rosh Hashanah. Somehow we have this notion that the judgment is sort of in abeyance. We have time until Yom Kippur to change it, but that's a different topic. But really in the Mishnah, Yom Kippur is no day of judgment. Yom Kippur is a day of tshuva, but it's not a day of judgment. That's Rosh Hashanah. But the honest, if we think about it for half a minute, we realize that the most important day of judgment, of course, is on Sukkot. Obviously, water is the most important thing. Yeah, individuals are judged in Rosh Hashanah, so that's true. That impacts on you. But in terms of the future of the world, in terms of the planet and the universe and climate change, so the world is judged on Sukkot. This is the most important judgment time of the year on Sukkot, even though we don't necessarily feel it that way. But that's B'chag Nidonim L'Maim. This is really just one other way where Sukkot is the holiday par excellence. It's the premier holiday of the Torah, and it's the one that it's the Mishnah calls it, you know, Chag, holiday, the holiday. The holiday. When you say the holiday, the writer, the great one, then we know that's the most important one of all the holidays. So that's, as we know, Sukkot is the time we're judged in water. Now, water, of course, is in the Torah the most important reward we get. We say it every day in the Shema. Vayam Shemoa Tishmoa Mitzvot. If we listen to Mitzvot, V'natati Matar Tzechem, I'll give you rain. People sort of downplay, you know, why can't the Torah give us greater rewards? Rain, you know, and prosperity. But rain and prosperity, that's a pretty good reward. That's about as good as it gets. And so rain is central to everything we do. Okay, and then that's kind of obvious. This is what makes the world goes round, what makes us happen. Now, when does the rainy season begin? Okay, so that's, let's assume in Israel, right? Our tefillot. Oh, I forgot to look it up more, but I think I mentioned before the first question, as far as I know, sent from the New World to the Old World in 1654. Which is when Jews first arrived in America, in South America, and they were in Brazil. I remember I spoke about it during the 2012 Olympics. Was the 2012 Olympics in Rio de Janeiro? I forget already. One of those Olympics was in Brazil. So, of course, I have to give a shiur on the Olympics and Torah. So the first Shaila ever sent to the New World, it was sent to Amsterdam, was, I believe, when do you say Mashiva Ruach in the Southern Hemisphere? Because everything is backwards. When do you pray for rain? Because if you pray for rain on December the 5th till Pesach, they're praying for rain in the summer. So that was the first question. That was very, very practical. You're right there. Everything is upside down. Anyway, so that's when is the rainy season? So we're going to assume it's in Israel. Because that's how the Mishnah assumes. Although, when does the rainy season begin? Anybody? Well, what about Sukkot itself? So the Mishnah says, it's important to note that the Mishnah distinguishes between mentioning rain, what we call Mashif Aruch Amorit Hageshem, whatever, and the Tein Talu Matar, actually praying for rain. We only begin to pray for rain. We'll see one of my favorite halachot in all of Judaism. The Mishnah quotes a debate. You start on the third of Cheshvan or the seventh of Cheshvan, but everybody agrees you don't start on Sukkot. We don't start on Shemini Atzeret either. In other words, it's not like we want it to rain on Sukkot, but we don't want it to rain on Sukkot because that's a bad sign. That's as the Mishnah says. That's like the master tells his servant, get me a glass of water. And he brings in the glass of water. He throws it in his face. We don't want it to rain on Sukkot because then we have to leave the Sukkah. Okay. So therefore we push off the prayer for rain to Shemini Atzeret. And therefore that's the time we want rain. That's not exactly true, because we do not begin praying for rain on Shemini Atzeret. We mention Mashiv Aruch, God brings rain. That's very different. The Mishnah is very clear. There's a distinction between saying it, and we know, and Betain Talamatar went, Barech Aleinu, please God, let us have a successful economic year. Please bring the rain. So everybody agrees we don't start praying for rain until Cheshvan. So you have to say, why is the world judged on Sukkot for rain? But we don't start till Cheshvan. But halachically, it's such a beautiful halacha. Maybe we should start on the third of Cheshvan, but we, of course, wait till the seventh of Cheshvan. Why do we wait till the seventh of Cheshvan? Those who are in Israel now should answer the question.
Travelers.
Excellent. You're not in Israel, but I'll give you a pass anyway. It took 15 days. Imagine, can you imagine somebody traveling 15 days to do Aliyah LeRegel? There's a mitzvah to go three times a year to the Beit HaMikdash. We know it clearly wasn't observed widely by all, what do you think, every Jew went three times a year to the Beit HaMikdash? But apparently was more widely observed on Sukkot, and Sukkot, as we mentioned, is the most temple-focused holiday. But it took some people 15 days to travel. Now, that's 15 days one way. So that's 30 days. And then you got a week of Sukkot. So you're talking, and Shemini Atzeret, you're talking a minimum of 38 days. Can you imagine going on Aliyah LeRegel for 38 days? Unbelievable. But since there were people who lived 15 days away, it's not nice. It's not nice to pray for rain while they're traveling. It's such a beautiful halakha. Really, we need rain. We need rain. But we tell people to come to Jerusalem, and we're going to pray for rain while they're in their horse and buggy on the way home. So we wait 15 days until the last of the travelers are home, and then we can start to pray for rain. Really, we should have started already. It's interesting, and I haven't really thought about it. I think it's only in Nusach Ashkenaz, not in Nusach Sfard. But after the Kohen Gadol, after they vote, all the beautiful, the piyutim that some shuls don't say, but they're really beautiful. So one of the things we say there, I believe, is Lo Yetfilat of Rei Drachim, that the prayers of the travelers shouldn't interfere with, the rains. Like we're worried about travel, it's never going to rain. Presumably, those are talking about business people traveling like in December, January, February. Can't worry about everybody. Then we can't pray for rain. But if somebody's coming to Yerushalayim to do Aliyah LeRegel, we're not going to pray for rain while they're on their way home. Okay, so why do we mention Mashiv HaRuch now? Then the rainy season begins in Cheshvan. Now, that's also strange, because the rainy season is a solar thing. It's not a lunar idea. So clearly, we don't have exact dates. In other words, you say the rainy season begins in October, okay? You can't say it begins in Cheshvan, because sometimes Cheshvan is in September the 25th, like last year, and sometimes it's October 28th. Like it's very late. Our holidays vary by approximately a month. from the earliest to the latest. You think this year's late? Wait another 2 years when we have a leap year, then it's gonna be 8-9 days later than it is now. And then last year, you remember, Rosh Hashanah was on September 6th, Labor Day. So, and then soon it'll be October 5th. So it's very hard to pin a rainy season on a lunar month. But okay, that's what we do. It's not exacting. So Sukkot is the time of the beginning of the rain, or the time we begin to think about water. It's a time when God wants to judge us for water, probably because dice of judgments are always on Yom Tov. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, and Rosh Hashanah. Only Yom Kippur gets off a day of judgment. In other words, all the days of judgment are in Yom Tov. God could say, we could say that Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan is a day of judgment. We don't say that. Presumably because Yom Tov is a time of tshuva. Every Yom Tov is a time of tshuva. Every Yom Adin, it's a Yom Tov tshuva. So we focus on Rosh Hashanah. But all of them, we mentioned last year when we gave a shir on Yisker, the reason we say Yisker and Shemini Atzeret and Pesach and Shavuot and Yom Kippur is to do tshuva. It's not Yisker as mourning. Tova, I was very interested here. I somebody Dovins at the Beit, the biggest Orthodox shul in Toronto, told me something over Yom Tov. Now in Chol HaMoed, I was very impressed. I'm sure in most of your shuls, they announce that people who Baruch Hashem don't have to say Yisker should leave the shul. Some, it's like an Ayin Hara superstition. You know, why should they be in shul and say Yisker? So, my father was a rabbi for any, he always opposed that practice. If the point of Yisker is to say, is to do tshuva, to remind us, so who, you're very lucky your parents are alive, that's wonderful. But that has no impact on what Yisker is meant to be. So, Jonathan Levy told me, Tova, that, Rabbi Karopkin has now made a push for people to stay in for Yisker. I don't know how successful it was, but he's urging everybody, those who don't have to say Yisker, to stay in. Because the purpose of Yisker is not to mourn for your parents or anything like that. It's to remind us that we're not going to live forever and we have to do tshuva. And therefore, it's a much different thing. And
he made a card. Actually, people were using a card to say, thank God for my living parents, for those who were.
Were you at the Beit?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
You're at the Beit. Okay, fine. Okay, good. And so, how successful was he?
So apparently some people, they didn't have enough cards, but a lot of people stayed in and okay, they did use the card that said, thank God for my living.
It's an archive, you know, half the people walk out. It's very nice. People walk out. It's very nice. People don't have to say Yisker, but it's a little bit, it's not. Okay. I know that's the practice I think most people have. You can let me know. But anyways, that's kind of interesting. So, but the idea of Yom Tov is to do tshuva. Every Yom Tov is a mini Yom Kippur, a mini Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, it's a day of judgment. Now, we have a machloka. Let me share the first Mishnah in Tanit. I think some people may be familiar with the Mishnah. Let's take a look at the Mishnah inside. The Mishnah says, where are we here? From when do we say Gvurat Geshamim? That's the strength of rain. Now, the Gemara has an amazing comment. When do we say Gvurat Geshamim? We say it in the bracha of Mechaye HaMeitim, right? Mechaye HaMeitim is mentioned 5 times in that bracha, right? You look, and then we end Mechaye HaMeitim. Why do we say it in Mechaye HaMeitim? So the Gemara has this, like, seems like a ridiculous comment almost. So the Gemara here in Bracha, it says, my Tama, why do we mention Gvura Gshamim, that's Mashiv HaRuach, in the second bracha of Shemon Esrei? Amar Rav Yosef, Mishloch Sheshgula Tutchiyat HaMeitim. It's equivalent to the resurrection of the dead. Rain, and rain gives life, and it's like Tchias HaMeitim. I think there's another source that implies more sort of it's as difficult or as easy for God. The rain and Tchias HaMeitim are one and the same. Like, you know, rain, okay, we don't see it that way, but it's really the same idea. But the idea that rain is life. Rain, I mean, if you think about the trees and the flowers every year, they have a Tchias HaMeitim in the spring. That's what it means. They were dead all winter, and now they come alive again. So that's why we mentioned this. So Rav Elazar says, "Miyanta Rishon Shachag." We should start to say Mashiv HaRuach on the first day of Sukkot, last Monday. Rabbi Yeshua says, "Miyanta V'Achron on Shmini Atzeret," which is our practice. Amar Lo Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua said to Rabbi Elazar, "Why? Eliezer, since it's a curse, right? It's like I said, God throwing us out of the sukkah, come to the sukkah and then he throws us out. Why would we mention Lamahu Maskir? Why, you know, it's ridiculous to mention rain. Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer says, I didn't say we should ask for rain. Alaskir, to mention rain. Oh, that's very different. I'm not praying for rain. I'm mentioning rain. Mashiva Ruch, Morita Geshem, Ba'onato, at the proper time. Amar lo. So Rabbi Yeshua says, Im Kain lo Lam Yeh Maskir. Okay, if you're not asking for rain. So in the summer, we should say Mashiva Ruch, Morita Agashem. Now, the Gemara doesn't give the response of Rabbi Eliezer, but the response would be pretty clear. Rabbi Eliezer says, yeah, I only ask for rain. I only mention rain when it's the beginning of the rainy season. Sukkot is approximately the beginning of the rainy season. So it's appropriate to mention. I'm going to pray. It's the time we're judged on the water. So it, of course we should mention it. Okay, I'm not going to ask for it. And Rabbi Yeshua somehow links it. If you're not going to, if you don't want rain, don't make mention. You know, like, we talked to, don't even talk about it. Don't even talk about rain on Sukkot. And Rabbi Eliezer says, yeah, we can talk about it because it is the time we're judged on rain. But we're not going to actually ask for rain for another 15 days. So that's machloka. We follow, of course, Rabbi Yeshua's view. Okay, that's just now. I just heard it was very interesting. I was the other day, I was walking home from school. So I don't know I just turned on YU Torah. So I was flipping through. So he must have given it a long time ago because the picture was really young. Ari Schwat, who spoke here a while ago, he was giving a shiur. It was actually, I looked in the business ethics. I don't know how the shiur got into business ethics. I have no idea, but it was on Sukkot. So, he mentioned, I never really thought about it. What's Sukkot is Ananei HaKavod, the clouds of glory, Aaron, the clouds of glory, that's what we assume our Sukkot are, that they protect us. Nu Ananei HaKavod, clouds. So what happens after you have clouds? After you have clouds, it rains. So the Ananim are on Sukkot, and the rain is on Shemini. It's cute, but there's something to it. I think the idea is if we do tshuva properly, if we take the Ananei HaKavod to heart, right, everything is meant for us, right, what we can learn from it, then the Ananei HaKavod gets followed immediately on Shemini Atzeret by rain. Now, of course, we do pray for rain on Sukkot. In the time of the Beit HaMikdash, we had Nisuch HaMayim. They used to pour water libations on the Mizbeach. This was, you learn Masechet Sukkot. It's like, it's a lot of fun. There are more stories in the Mishnah in Masechet Sukkah than I believe in any other Mishnah in all of Shas. There are many stories in the Mishnah. In Tevi, sleeping under the bed, all kinds of fasting stories in Masechet. So one of the stories, and remember, Sukkot is a time of Jewish unity, right? Is the story of the Tztuki, the poor Tztuki, Kohen Gadol. The Tztukim didn't accept the mitzvah of Nisuach HaMayim because it's not mentioned anywhere in the Torah that you pour water on the altar. So the Tztuki, he was that was corrupted. The religious leadership was corrupted towards the end of the Second Temple period. So very often people got in power, money. It was like politicians. It wasn't a religious institution. It was a political institution. So we know how politicians are. So he got in and he's pouring the water, but he doesn't want to pour it on the altar. So he pours it on his feet. He pretends to pour it, but he pours it on the ground. So it says the Mishnah, everybody threw their etrogim at him. A thousand people whipped their etrog at him, and there's so many etrogim, they actually damaged the Mizbeach. It damaged the altar. So Nisuach HaMayim was a big fight, as was Hoshana Rabbah, which is also really Hoshana Rabbah. Look at the Hoshanas we're going to say on Sunday. All of the Hoshanas, even if they don't mention it, it's really about rain. Hoshana, God save us, God help us. Give us rain. But on Hoshana Rabbah, many of the, especially towards the end, they actually mention water. It's a water rain. So we do actually daven. We did actually daven, despite whatever the machloket in the Mishnah about Mashif HaRuach. They did Nisuach HaMayim. We did the Hoshanas. The Arava is also a form of rain. What's an Arava? It has to be Gadol al HaMayim. It has to grow by the water. That's the definition. So water, it does make its way very much into our prayers on Sukkot, even without saying Mashiva Ruach Umrit Geshem. Okay, now we can start. I want to spend the time. Let's go through Tfilat Geshem itself. And please, God, at the end, we'll have time to go through a modern Tfilat HaGeshem, because our Tfilat HaGeshem only talks about men. And of course, we live in an egalitarian world. So I was, before I got this, I was wondering, why is there no Geshem for Miriam? I mean, Miriam, in the Schut of Miriam, we had water, which also is fascinating. In other words, Miriam is the most important of the three Avot. In the Schut of Moshe, we had man, we had bread. Okay, bread, food's important. But even more important than food is water. And Aronat protect Aronai HaKavod. And when Miriam died, there was no water. So it's very, very strange in a way. And I tried to look, I mean, I did look up a little bit. We'll get in a second. They're not going to talk about that, because obviously throughout most of history, obviously it's going to be male, because that's how everybody operated. I mean, it's really the larger question. Why do we say Elohei Abraham, Elohei Yitzchak, Elohei Yaakov? Why don't we say Sarah Rivka Racha Valea, which I think they do in Reform shuls and stuff. I get it. But in other words, it's sort of we focus on the male. So obviously the tefillot are going to focus on the male. But that's not really true. You look at our tefillot on Rosh Hashanah. We often invoke females, and in the Haftorah it's about Rachel and Chana. So it is a little bit, I was kind of wondering, I don't really know. Why not say Miriam? And I don't really have a good answer to that question, because it's Beschut Miriam that we have water. And of course, the name Miriam is water. Take out the Resh. Mem, Resh, Yud, Mem. Take out the Resh. Miriam's name spells water. Yam, see, Miriam, the last two letters. Miriam's all about water. She's the one who saved Moshe. And of course, she takes Moshe out of the water, and et cetera, or is there when he's taken out of the water. So it's very interesting. So hopefully we'll get to a modern Israeli version of tefillah, of Geshem for a woman. But okay, let's do our traditional one first. We are traditional Jews, and we follow that our practices that have been hallowed for thousands of years. Although that raises another problem. So I said, okay, last week I said I'll give a shiur on tefillah Geshem, but of course I hadn't done any preparation, so I had no idea what I was going to be talking about when I said it. But that's the best way to learn. So I put out here my shelf, my eight different Sidurim, Otzer Tfilah, Diyun Tfilah, Torah Chaim, Rabbi Yaakov Emdim, the Abud Raham, Slota Davram, one by one. Not one of them mentions Tfilah Geshem. So what in the world is going on here? Not one of them. They talk about Hosha, everything. Not a word. It's Tfilah Geshem and Tal do not exist. I have no idea why. What's going on? Baruch Hashem. In a Tibina written by Rav Jacobson, that's modern already. He's written in the 20th century. So he includes it, Baruch Hashem, a chapter. But it was like astounding. So I'm trying to figure out, when was Tfilat Geshem? When was it said? So I don't know, but I saw an article written. I find this hard to believe. I don't know who wrote it. On Rabbi Google has... everybody can join Rabbi Google. You don't need so much to get smicha from Rabbi Google. So with somebody, he was saying that perhaps that he says when Hertz, the famous Hertz Chumash. So when he printed a siddur also, that nobody uses. Everybody uses the Hertz Chumash. His siddur, the 1940s, and in the reprint in 1948, did not include Tal or Geshem. I'm assuming it is a non-Orthodox rabbi writing this, that even in the Orthodox right, people didn't say it so much. And only with the establishment of the state of Israel, the Tal and Geshem. I find that hard to believe, but I don't know. I have to ask people. But I do find it astounding that the Sidurim, and I sent it out to my rabbinic group and nobody answered me. Does anybody know why none of the Sidurim actually talk about Tal and Geshem? And if you look in the Koran, all this modern English Sidurim, they have very little. They write very little about it. What does come out, it's not even in the RCA Sidur, it's not mentioned in Koran. I don't know if Art Scroll mentioned it. Who composed Geshem and Tal? Rav Elazar HaKalir. Yehuda Mirsky, one person who answered me, Dr. Yehuda Mirsky lives in Israel, professor at Brandeis. So he was the one who pointed me out, this woman. When for Geshem, so he said the original Geshem was much, much longer. The piyut that we have, where is six stanzas, is much shorter. The original one was much longer, but as you see, and if you start looking in manuscripts, there are hundreds of different versions, obviously, of Tfilat Geshem. As a matter of fact, my other question, which I should have realized on my own, if I would have thought about it, but why in Israel, as you may know, They say Tvila Geshem before Musaf, right? In America, and here in Chutz Laretz, we say it as part of Chazarat Hashatz, which I like better because it did the Baruch. You know, you get the whole Nusach. In Israel, they say Geshem, not even the whole thing. They don't do the first two paragraphs because that's part of the Chazarat Hashatz before Musaf. Why do they do it before Musaf? Because based on the Vilna Gaon and other people, halachic authorities never liked insertions in Chazarat Hashatz. That's a hefsek. That's an interruption. You have to say Chazal. You look in the, none of this, all piyutim are post Talmudic. None of this is in the Talmud. So what right do we have to add piyutim? So, and now, generally America has gotten rid of the piyut, right? You go to German shuls, I think they still say in Breuer's all the piyutim. But, American shuls have gotten rid of piyut. That's Minag America. Is that right or wrong? Is a fascinating question. It's like a reform movement, you know, like a reform. We reformed the Siddur. We threw out all the piyutim. But many of the halakhic authorities never liked the piyutim. So in a sense, they're happy. Now, when do we keep the piyut? On Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Unatan and Tokev. You know, that's what the Vilna goes. Would that be a hefsek? How can you throw in Unatan and Tokev in the middle of the Chazar Hashavah? Right before Kedusha, you're going to throw in a hefsek? You can't do that. So in Israel, we've mentioned in the past, the practices of Vilna Gaon have become very well accepted. So the practice is to say it before, which already tells you that it's, you know, maybe some people didn't, it wasn't so important. It's not really part of the Chazar Hashatz. You know, you say before, okay, and we're in a hurry and we're in Israel. It's Shemini Atzeret and Simchas Torah on the same day. Who has time? You know, so I just find it fascinating. And if anybody has any insight or anybody remembers what their grandparents told them, I'm sure my father told me growing up, he never heard Kohelet, Ruch, who lane Kohelet, Ruch or Shir, no Shtibel. No, Shuls didn't lane that. Now everybody lanes Kohelet, it wasn't common growing up. It's interesting how minhagim develop and change. So that was just an interesting thing that it was not mentioned in too many places. But yeah. The piyut is it's a six paragraph alphabetical acrostic, which now each one is four lines. So six times four is 24. So they took the English and the Hebrew alphabet and compromised 22, 26, 24. No, doesn't quite work that way. So of course, tough. It gets three, like we do in Ashamnu. We also have 24 Ashamnus, Ta'inu, Tiavnu, Titanu, right? We say three tafs. So too here, it's an Aleph Beit, and the letter taf will come up three times in the last one. That's a very interesting. I don't know why in Ashamnu we have to do that. Ashamnu is not like a six, like why not just have one for one? That I don't know. I only sort of thought about it, you know, as I was preparing for this. I didn't look into that. But here I understand it. Here they want to have four lines for each one and six stanzas. So you need to have 24 lines. So you need to do three. Now, if you'll notice, you can open up your Siddur. I'll wait half a minute. Everybody should get a, it'll be easier if you have a Siddur and Chazar Hashatz for Musaf. And here they don't even say, they just assume it's in Chazar Hashatz. Tal is a backwards alphabetical acrostic. Tal begins with Taf Shin Resh Kuf. Geshem is a forward alphabetical acrostic, like Atbash. We have those occasionally. You have that in one of the piyutim, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, I think, in Shachri, in the piyut that we say right after my Yareti Bibsoti Siach Lashkil. Right after there, we say that stuff, you know, the silent stuff, the chazan can catch his breath. I think one is starts Aleph Beit, the next one is Tav Shin, right? All these literary, all the piyutim besides their beauty and illusions are all literary creations and they all follow, you know, literary styles. Okay. Zev just pointing out, I see Chabad doesn't lane Kohelis, Eichan Esther. Yeah, that was the practice many shuls had. Today, you don't lane Kohelis, they'll yell and scream at you. Okay, Beseder. Okay. So let's go through it. So out Rav Elezer HaKalir, the greatest of the Paitanim, and of course, we know very little about him. We're not, you know, when he lived, it's assumed today he lived the 7th or 8th century, 8th century, post-Talmudic. Even though Tosfot identifies him with the son of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, that's generally not accepted at all. by Rav Soloveitchik for sure didn't accept it. It's clear, whatever. But we know very little about him. And at the time, he, like I said, people don't like Piyutim. He himself was controversial. Even Ezra was very upset. He didn't like Rav Elazar Kalir because he made up Hebrew words. He made up things, you know, to fit into his style. And also his style is so hard to understand. There's so many midrashic allusions. You have to be like a super duper Talmud Chacham to begin to understand most of his. Geshem's actually easier. One of his easier Piyutim to understand. So the Sephardic Piyutim and Slichos are much easier to follow than the Ashkenazic one. The Ashkenazi, they wrote things that the average person doesn't have a clue what they're saying. Okay. Zechor Avnim Shachach Arecha Kamaim. So we begin with Abraham. And of course, every line ends with Mayim. Obviously, this is, I mean, not obvious, but we like Geshem, not surprisingly. Every line ends with the word Geshem. And then, of course, there's a four-line stanza, right? There's six paragraphs, four lines each. And then the Kahal answers, there's a refrain. The refrain goes back, Bavuro altimnamayim, in for this person's sake, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, whatever, don't take mayim, or Bitsitko, in his righteousness, Bavuro or Bitsitko, Chon chashod mayim, give us abundance of water. So we begin with Abraham. Now, all of these six people are connected to water. So Zechor Avnim Shach Acharecha Kemaim. So Avram, so the first Av, why is Avram Av? Because Avram is Av Haman Goyim. Avram is the father of our religion, the father of all nations. So Zechor Av Nimshach Acharecha Kemaim. So that's a generic statement. Avram Avinu followed God like water flows, natural, just downriver. God, whatever God, Avram followed God, before there was a God, right? Avram, God only appears to, how old is God, Avram when God first appears to him? That's a pasuk in the Chumash.
75.
And how old was Avram when he discovers God? So they're different versions, 3, 40, 52, different, like a quarterback, Lahabdil, you know, 3, 4, 40. By the way, the one of 52, just for half a second, is because that fits into this, wild Talmudic passage that the world's going to last for 6,000 years. And the first 2,000 years were Tohu Vavohu. The next 2,000 years are Torah. So when is the second 2,000 years started? Avram Avinu. He brought Torah. I mean, didn't get the Torah, but he, you know, the beginnings of Torah to the world, the ideas of Torah. And knew Avram was born, as I'm sure most people know, anybody who's a Zionist, of course, knows this. Avram was born in the year 1948. Yes, it's a different 1948, but there are no coincidences in this world. So clearly, Avram was born in 1948 for a purpose. No, 1948 and 52 is 2000. So that's the basis of the view that Avram began to discover God at 52. 40, we understand. 40 is a transformative number in Judaism. 40 years in the desert, 40 years in Mount Sinai, 40 days of the flood, 40 days before Fetus. 40 is transformation. So now Moshe's at Har Sinai for 40 days. So it makes sense that Avram discovered God at 40. And 3 is God's, 3 years old. You know, Rivka was 3. You know, that's when you begin everything. So Avram was so precocious, he began to understand God. Different views and measures, it clearly doesn't matter, obviously. And these are all ideas. Like we always say, take Midrashim seriously, but not literally. Take him seriously, but not literally. But whatever it is, he discovered God before God appeared to him. So that's the idea. Zechor Avnim Shachach Rekamayim. Even before, who knew there was a God? It took till 75 till God revealed himself to him. Okay. No, God doesn't reveal himself to us. So where that says us, we have the schud of Abram to follow God without any revelation. Berchotoke Eit Shatul Afalge Mayim. That's a reference to the first parak in Tehillim. He will be blessed like a tree on the river. That's Vayaka Eitz Shatul Afalge. That's the first parak in Tehillim. The blessing of a tree on the river, beautiful and giving shade and light and life and fruit and all these wonderful things. You shielded him and protected him and saved him from Eishin Mayim. So what's that? That's a reference already to Midrashim. These are famous Midrashim. The Eish Midrash is that Nimrod threw him into the furnace there. Even though it's the Ramban, like, you know, in good Ramban style question, did that really happen? Is that really true? It's not mentioned anywhere in the Torah, but, you know, in the little Medrash says it's mentioned a lot. So Avram Avinu was thrown into the furnace. And of course, what's my mime is Tashlich. Maim is Tashlich, because as the Medrash says, when Avraham Avinu went to sacrifice Yitzchak, the Satan wanted to stop him, and he kept putting water. Water, like he was like Nachshon ben Aminadav, Abraham, you know, but he kept going. The water's up to his nose and he's going, so fine, okay, he gave up. I can't win. Abraham's, he's going to go whatever. He's going to find a way. So that's, he was saved from Eshemayim. The Rosh Tovah's Aro, I'll call Hamayim. It was hard to figure out, what does this mean? The Rosh Tovah Bizarro, I seek him, Bizarro in his seed on all waters. So you'd say so what's the Rosh Tovah Bizarro is Yitzchak. So I don't know, it's a little unclear what it means. In the Tibina, the one like Siddur, that does explain Geshem a little bit. So he brings a comment that this is a reference to Zera is seeds, but it means agriculture. This is a reference to the famine that Avraham Avinu faced when he first came to Israel. And he passed the test. You know, Avraham Avinu had 10 tests. So Darashta Bezero, God, you wanted to see what's he going to react. I tell him to go to Israel, and 5 days later, there's no food to eat. What is he going to go? God, this is ridiculous. I don't go for this stuff. And he's going to give up on the whole thing. No, Avram still was a righteous person. So Derashto Bizarro, I'll call my man on the family. That's how he explains. I don't know if it fits 100%. That's what he explains. By the way, that of course assumes that Avram acted correctly by going to Egypt. As many people may know, the Ramban is harshly critical. It's so harshly critical of the Ramban. It's like, whoa. If you were to quote somebody who doesn't know and you didn't tell him you're quoting the Ramban, he'd call you a heretic. He said, you know that Avraham Avinu chet gadol, a terrible sin. God tells him to go to Israel and there's famine. And the next thing he goes to Egypt. Whoa, what happened? God just told him. He doesn't have any faith in God. And other people say, no, well, what do you mean? Faith in God. We don't rely on God. Yeah, we have faith in God. But, yeah, you know, God, it's like the, you know, there's in the floods, you know, the guy won't go. He's waiting for God. The canoe, the helicopter, the uncle said, where were you? He said, I was waiting for you. So God says, I sent you a canoe. I sent you a plane, you know, gotta do action. So that's a very important theological debate. Was Abraham correct in going to Egypt? The Ramban says no. Which, by the way, just off the side, I'm just thinking about this for the first time ever. Maybe this fits with the Ramban's view that nobody holds today, that a tzaddik amur, maybe somebody holds it, but we don't have any people who are tzaddik and gemurim, shouldn't rely on medicine. A true tzaddik doesn't need medicine. And the Hashem Rofecha, God heals you. So maybe this is part of sort of the Ramban's high level religiosity. That you have total faith in the righteous people, they can rely on God, whatever it is. But here, this piyut, if that's the explanation, is assuming it was not a sin for Abraham to go to Egypt. He still believed in God. Everything was God. But okay, God's telling me there's no famine. I got to go where the food is. Okay. That's Abraham. Then we come to Yitzchak. We begin Yitzchak with Abraham. Zechor hanolad, always remember. Zechor, yisker, memory, tradition. Zechor hanola bibsurat yukach namat maim. Remember the one who was born with the thing yukach namat maim. Why was Yitzchak born? Because Ephraim was a chnasid orchim. Because Ephraim wants to have guests. If who knows what would have happened? I don't know. If Avram wouldn't have been standing at the, I know everybody's going to say, well, God would have done it anyways. But in the simple reading of the text, had Avram Avinu not been welcoming guests in the heat of the day after 3 days of Brit Mila, they wouldn't have any kids. Because they wouldn't have invited the angels into his house, whatever. But because of Yukach Namat Maim, have a little bit of water, Zechor Hanola Bibsurat, he was born because of Avram's giving him water. It's a beautiful idea. And we know Sukkot is Ushpizin Haknasad Orchim. That's the time we invite guests, we give to the poor. Vesachta Lahoro, a siach, a discussion, Lasuach Basadeh. Vesachta lo horo, horo means his parent. That's you spoke to his parent, that's Avram. God spoke to Yitzchak's parent, horo, not horim. Because had God asked Sarah, in other words, you know, Sarah's absent from the Akedah for good reasons. God couldn't be so cruel to ask a mother to sacrifice his son. It's pretty harsh to ask a father to sacrifice his son. Nunu, that's one problem that we grapple with. But to ask a mother, that's, and probably Sarah wouldn't have listened. I mean, I shouldn't say such a thing, but I assume a mother wouldn't listen. And that's okay. You defend the mother. So Sarah is totally absent in the Akedah. Avram doesn't talk to her for obvious reasons. I mean, just, you know, v'sachta lohoro. So to the one singular parent, God spoke l'shochto, to slaughter him. Pretty. That his blood should flow like water. Again, the idea of water. Now, I'm going to kill him in the service of God. That's the ancient way. We believe in the ancients and still today believe in human sacrifice. Zohar gamhu lishpoch lev kamayim. So this, so gamhu, even Yitzchak went willing to. He asked his father, Bayachush name yachtav, ayeh haseh le'ola, where is the seh le'ola? And his father says, Hashem yireli haseh. Lo'ola bini, right? You have to read it. God will show me the sheep, lo'ola, and if not, bini, then it's you, my son, you'll be the ola, right? That's how, you know, the understanding, that part between ola and bini. And the next verse, v'yachush neim yachta, v'yitzchak goes to the father. So this is the idea that Yitzchak himself, gamhu lishpach lechemam, he was willing to be sacrificed. That's why the greatness of Yitzchak. There are, we did mention last year, Gil Pearl, when he gave a shiur on art on the Akedah before Rosh Hashanah last year, if you remember, he did talk about, Rav Lichtenstein was the one who told him to go see this art, I forget who the name of the artist was, where you have pictures of Yitzchak resisting. That Yitzchak had to be forced to the Akedah. Avram had to time down. That's not the classical interpretation, but it is interesting that such ideas. Now, the artist wasn't a religious Jew, but if Rav Lichtenstein told him to go see it, I believe it means there is a way to understand the story that Yitzchak was not so didn't think it was such a wonderful idea. Anyway, but clear, the traditional explanation, I get it. Yitzchak is. Zohar gamhu lishpach lev kamayim, chafar umatsa beirat mayim. This is very interesting. And then we switch very from the, you know, wow, from the Akedah. What comes next? Digging wells. Chafar matsa beirat mayim. Yitzchak dug all the wells of his father, and that's it. Beirat mayim, and digging for water. So that's Yitzchak b'tzikochon karshav mayim. Zachor ta'an maklo v'avar yardein ma'im. Now we're into Yaakov. Remember the one who crossed the river. Kiva makli avarti at hayardein azeh. Because when I crossed the Jordan River, whatever river, I assume the Jordan, when he's running from to go into Laban's house, right? He says this when he is about to meet Esav after 22 years. So he's saying, you know, when I left 22 years ago, when I crossed, kiva makli avarti at hayardein azeh. With just my, I had nothing. I crossed this part of Ta'an Maklo. He took his stick, Vavar Yardein Mamim, and he crossed the Yardein with water. Yichad Le Begal Evan, Mipi Ber Mamim. That's when he went to the first place. He sees the stones, and Rachel is there, and, you know, she can't drink. And Yaakov Avinu, you know, the strength of the romantic love gave him that strength, and he pushes the rock away. Gal Evan, Mipi Ber Mamim. He removed the rock from the Ber Mamim. Kenavach Lo Sar Balul Beish Mamim. Like the angel who fought with him made up. What's an angel made up? He's made up of fire and water. Okay. That's how the image of the angel, fire and water, of course, which are opposites, right? Fire and water don't really coexist. It's a whole other idea, right? But Eshumayim, right? We often in our liturgy put them together, but you have to think about it. It's really two opposites. But Lachain Hiftachto Yotimo Beshmaim. So you promised him you'll be with him with water and fire. So presumably that is a reference to Yaakov had a really difficult life, the ups and downs in life. God said, I will be with you. Yeah, it's going to be tough. You know, first, okay, you have Lavan. He's going to drive you crazy and you're going to not get to marry the wife you wanted, really. You never really developed a relationship with Rachel, never really got off the ground, even though they did marry. And then you're going to have problems with Dina and then problems with Yosef. You're going to have a miserable life. I mean, that's what Yaakov said. When Paro asked him, how old are you? The first thing Paro says to Yaakov, how old are you? So that already, well, why didn't the first, we could go meet the President of the United States. How old are you? What kind of question is that? It means Yaakov looked, oh my God, he took a look at him. This is Yosef's father. How can he be Yosef's father? He looks like 100 years older than me. Oh my God, he's wrinkled. Says, yeah, Yaakov says, yeah, you know what? I had a really lousy life. I don't remember the expression now. Somebody can say it. Yaakov Avinu says, "You ma'atu ra'im."
Ra'im,
right? Terrible. I had bad life, And the Chizkuni there, somebody quotes a Midrash, beautiful Midrash, Yaakov Avinu, God got a little angry. That's for him, you know, he shouldn't have said that. And there are 33 words.
And for each day, right?
Correct. For each word, he lost a year. That's why he lived to be 147, as opposed to Yitzchak, who lived to be 180, because the 33-word conversation between Paro and Yaakov. Nunu. Anyway, so God is promising Yaakov, I'll be with you, Be'eshu B'mayim. But we're all team the mind. Listen, all are about, that's what, listen, the school, I assume everybody here was raised in, is that are what weren't perfect. That's what makes them so wonderful. They were human beings. They weren't angels. They were human beings, and human beings are human beings. And human beings, they grow from their mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. Moshe Rabbeinu, that's okay. It's good to make mistakes. That's, Ein Tzadik Bar, it's a Asher Yaseh Tov, Lo Yechtah. And that's, we're going to read this on Shabbos, Kohelet. Ain't nobody who sins, there's no tzaddik who doesn't sin. I've mentioned before, it doesn't mean that there's nobody who doesn't sin. I mean, it means that, but that's not what it means. It means in order to be a tzaddik, you have to sin. Ain't tzaddik bar, you want to be a tzaddik, you better sin first. Because the only way we grow, if you never fell off, if you never made a mistake and never grew, how many successful business people have failures you don't know about? Everybody who's a success had failures. If you don't have failures, you can't be a success. You don't sin. But Malcolm Shabali Chubom, the main a person who never is a tzaddik, he can't really achieve greatness. So ain't tzaddik baretz, of course you can. So our avot were wonder, amazing people, but they weren't perfect. That's what's made them almost perfect, the fact that they weren't perfect. Okay. Zechor Mashua b'Tevet Goma Mina Mayim obviously is a reference to Moshe. He was pulled from the ark, not the ark, whatever it's in the crib. I don't know what the word is. I can't think of the word. What's the Teva? An ark, right? There is a lot of comparisons between Noah and Moshe. We won't go there now, but Zechor Masui, that's his name. Moshe Masui, he was lifted up, but Paro gave him the name. The Tevet Goma, that's what they put the material on it. Minamayim, Namo Dalo Dalo Vishkat Son Mayim. That's talking about Yitro's daughter. Again, all our great leaders were Roet Son, Avraham, Moshe, David. They're all shepherds, right? Moshe, Roe, Et Son Yitro, right? And they wouldn't let their shepherds graze in other fields. So this is Moshe Rabbeinu. He fed the son, he fed the cattle or the sheep of Yitro's daughter, which of course how he gets to marry Tzipora. That's what it's referring to. Sigulecha, your nation, I'm Sigula, ate some ulamayim. They were very thirsty. Al hasela hachviyatsumayim. So Moshe hit the rock and out came water. Whoa, this is wild. This is wild. Moshe hit the rock. Is that a good thing that Moshe hit the rock? It says like that we're talking about the great. Right? These things talk about how great these people were, right? Reference. So it says Moshe, right. Oh, the Piyutis assuming everything is great. The Piyutis assuming it was right about Avraham to go to Yitzchak. The Piyutis doesn't say anything about Yaakov. I wrote that in that stuff about Yaakov. So Gulecha ate some umayim. The nation was thirsty. Miriam died. There was no water. Alat Salahach. He hit the water. But Yatsumayim. And his righteousness, we should have water. That's amazing.
The first time he was told.
I thought, I don't like that answer. Yeah, maybe that's the answer. I don't buy it. The answer is he hit the rock in Beshalach. Hit the rock in Beshalach the first 40 years, and that was okay, because at the beginning of the journey, knew what he expect. 40 years later, Moshe had to not hit the rock. I don't like that answer. Not because I don't like that. I don't think that, when anybody says to you, Moshe hit the rock, nobody thinks of in Beshalach. That's what nobody thinks about. When you're a Paitan, you're a poet, and you're writing about Moshe hitting the rock, you're not referring to Moshe hitting the rock in Parsha Beshalach. You're referring to Moshe, and it's about water. Miriam, come on. Now I did notice some of Mefarshim do say that. The few Mefarshim I could find, you know, but others say, no, it's referring, of course, in Parsha Chukat. So listen, it's only Rashi. I don't want to say it's only Rashi, but, the Ora Chaim says, I'm not commenting on this Torah portion because everybody finds a new sin for Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't want to find a new sin for Moshe. Shimuna Hamorim, Notzi, everybody has a different sin. It's only Rashi who says hitting the rock was a sin. Well, tell me, does it make any difference? You talk to rock or you hit the rock? And I think hitting rock is more impressive. You know, hit. Here I'm going to show, I'm going to snap my fingers. I'm going to hit the rock. And water's going, that's more impressive than, or at least as impressive as talking. So I would assume the Paitan is, according to the view, there was absolutely nothing wrong with Moshe hitting the rock. Maybe he did something else wrong. Okay. there's something else wrong, but not hitting the rock. Otherwise the piyut doesn't make sense. But I just think whatever the answer is, maybe you're right, maybe it's b'shalach. I just think just be aware of it. Like we say it without being aware of it. It's such a b'selo hach, al-selo hach b'yatsumayim. Okay. Zechor, we have to get to the woman's one. Zechor, pakid shatut tovel, pakid shatut. The pakid, the one in charge of the Evan Shtiyah, the place where the Aron HaKodesh stood. That's Aron HaKohen. Pakod shatut, shatut is the Beit Evan Shtiyah, the place where the foundation of the world, the foundation stone of the world, tovel chamesh tefilot b'mayim. He had to go to the mikveh 5 times on Yom Kippur. The Kohen went to the mikveh 5 times. So umarchitz kafav, he had to wash his hands actually 10 times. Before he went to the mikveh, he changed his clothes. So, you know, when he took his clothes off and put his clothes on, had to wash himself. So that's kiddush mayim. Kore umazeh tarat mayim. Kore umazeh. What's kore? He would read the Torah on Yom Kippur. The Kohen Gadol would read from Achrei Mot, the Mishnah describes in Yuma. He read Torah. What's mazeh? Mazeh, he would sprinkle. That achad, achad, v'shtayim, achad, v'arba, achad, v'chamesh. 5 times he sprinkled the blood. Kore umazeh tarat mayim, the purity of the water, right? So some say, no, he's sprinkling blood there. So, it made you pure like water. Some say that's a reference to of the paraduma mixed them, but it seems to be Yom Kippur. Rechak me'az pachas k'mayim. They separated them from the people. That's a reference to 7 days before Yom Kippur. The Kohen Gadol had to be separated to begin. Shivat yamim kodem Yom HaKippurim, 7 days before Yom Kippur, they removed the Kohen Gadol away. So it's fascinating that this entire thing about Aaron is only about Yom Kippur. I just find that very interesting. No reference to anything else. And Yom Kippur, of course, it says, Achrimot, what we did on Yom Kippur morning, the laning, the hood, it is given to Aaron. It doesn't say to the Kohen Gadol, just to Aaron. Aaron was the Kohen Gadol, but it's interesting. The Torah describes it as Aaron doing it. So here, everything about Aaron is a reference to Yom Kippur. Okay. It's just, we're 5 days or whatever, a week after Yom Kippur. So, that's the fifth one. And Zechor Shnei Masar Shvatim. Remember the 12 tribes. Now we talk about the Jewish people. Shavarta b'gizrat mayim, you crossed us on the Yamsuf. You split the sea, gizrat, you split the sea for us. Shem takta lamo miret mayim, you made the bitter water sweet. Vayavo marata v'lo yachlu lishlat mayim ki maremim. They came to Mara, bitter, and they couldn't drink water because the water was bitter. It's also Miriam. Miriam mayim, but Mar, from Mar to Yam, from bitterness to water, Miriam. Right? Okay, anyways. So God made the water sweet. That's the next verse in the Torah. God thought sweetened the water, they could drink it. Now the piyut ends on a sad note, which is not usually how we like to end. We always like to end on a positive note, but Todotam, their descendants, that's the descendants of the 12 tribes. Todotam nishpachta ma'amalechet k'mayim. Their blood has been spilt like water. Already here, you can tell the author has lived through times of persecution. So true, destruction of the temple, the Hadrianic persecution. But clearly the author is referencing terrible events in Jewish history. That's, of course, also the piyut earlier. We say, by Yitzchak, God was told Avram to make the blood spill like water. Of course, that didn't happen. But it happened, unfortunately, told Otam, the other Akedot Yitzchak. Now we pray to God to help us because we have these terrible troubles. God, the saying that the Jewish people are still righteous to God, we still fall in the path of Torah. We're an amazing people after all these years. Please give us water. And then, yeah, we want rain, but not a hurricane. L'chaim v'lo l'mav. We don't want people to be killed because of nature. L'sova v'lo l'rason. Hunger, to satiate us and not, you know, nebuch, a rain that doesn't really do any good. So anyway, it's a pretty simple I don't know. It's a beautiful piyut. We just have to take the time, all the piyut team, have to take time just to read it and to try to understand it. So what I want to do in the few minutes I have left, I said there's a, so I mentioned it to people, you know, why is it not mentioned? We're doing so. Yehuda Mirsky told me to look up a source sheet on Sepharia by Dahlia Marks. I'd never heard of her. Dalia Marks is a professor at Hebrew Union College in Jerusalem, and she has a whole source. And then she quotes this piyut that I'll show you in 1 minute of a woman made by, I forget, Rabbi Gun Korena, some woman in Israel in the renewal movement, the reform, you know. Obviously, they're not in the traditional camp. Maybe that's why they can make new piyutim, because they're not bound by, I don't know. But I still think, you know, Kabbalah met Mimi Shamro, when somebody says a beautiful thing, it doesn't matter, whatever. So I'm just going to share with you. I thought it was quite amazing. We won't go through it quite in depth. It's just, let me share the screen. And if anybody wants it, I can try to email it to them later. Okay, here we go. Okay, we start with Sarah. Tvilat Geshem Shal HaRabba, Rabbi, whatever, Rabbi, Ruth Gun Kagan. Ruth Kagan. Okay. I had never heard of her. I still don't know. I mean, I looked her up on the online. You know, you go into Google, you put in the name, so you get some information. She grew up in a from home. It says she grew up in a deeply religious Zionist home. And then, you know, she was very learned. And then she sort of went on her own path. Zechor Aim Beruach Kodesh Suka Kamaim. Yiska is Sarah. Remember the mother who the Ruach HaKodesh was full of water. Tzichoka, she was laughing when she was going to have a baby. Mikalgel kapalge ma'im, orach kanashim. That's the verse in the Torah that God returned her menstrual cycle. Orach kanashim heishaptala, returned to her kamaim. It's like flow like water. Banim heinike, she could nurse her children. Kishefa ma'im, like the abundance, you know, the milk, like water. Bavura, in the sake of Sar, we should have water. Let me go to Rivka. Zechor yotzet le'et erev lishof maim. You can see all the biblical references. Rivka went out to get water for her camels. Chesed, that's Rivka, is the chesed mikada, from her urn, whatever it's called. Zoreim kemaim, flowing like water. B'shama hagmini nat mat maim, you know, bring a little water for the camels. Shava, she raised it up. Ad kilu Kagmalim lishtot maim, so all the camels could drink water. You also notice there are also four. It follows the same style. Four, you know, little paragraphs. And then Bitzikam Chom Karshimaim. The same, you know, answer. Instead of Bavuro, of course, in his sake, it's going to be in her sake. They have Rachel and Leah, Zachor Roebai Matson al Piber. That's we are the opposite of Yaakov, right? It's Rivka, Rachel, who goes to the bear. Nehi Bechi Tamarim, that's Tav Torah, the first, the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Rachel's crying for her children. Bechi Tamarim, Mevakakam, I'm crying the tears in her eyes like water. Achota, that's Leah, Eina Rakwat Midamadmaim, the famous Midrash. Leah was crying because she was supposed to marry Leah. So her eyes were weak because she was crying. Rachma Patcha, her womb, you opened. Kanacha Maim, like the Rachel, because Rachel was hated, God opened up room. She had many children. Bavuran, in both of their sakes, Leah and Rachel, it's interesting, she joins them together, very beautiful. Altimna Maim. Zechor Nitzevet Ben Kineit Suf, all your mind. That, of course, is Miriam. Remember the one who stood at the Yam while Moshe's floating in the river. Nenodim Pua, Shifra and Pua. That's, of course, a machloka, but according to many midrashim, Shifra and Pua were Yocheved and Miriam. And Pua means, you know, to sort of to cuddle the baby. Latzila Micheshkemaim, take him up from the darkness of the water to save them. Betofu Machosara, that's after the Kriyat Yamsu. Vayikach Miriam et Hatufim betam Mechalot, she took her musical instruments. Ala Yam Kemaim, Bishuta, in her merit, in her merit, we have the Be'er Maim. B'tzikam chont grosh maim. In their merit, we should, and her merit, B'tzikat, we should, and her righteousness, we should have maim. The last one is Dvora and Ya'el, I guess referring to Sisra. Also, as we'll see, Zechor Yosheva tachat tomer bahar Ephraim, B'shirata, in the Shira, the singing of Dvor, which of course is the Haftorah of Parshat in B'shalach. And of course, this is also Rosh Hashanah, we'll see. Gam avim natvu kamaim, the clouds, water like water. Hakochavim b'mesilotam nilchamu mishmaim, the heavenly constellations and their movements, were fighting, were, I guess, helping us. Tevarach min hashim Ya'el, that Ya'el should be blessed from a womb. That's the killing of Sisra. Chalav natna, she gave him milk to put him to sleep so she could put it back in his head. Chalav natvu kamaim, b'varon al tim namaim. So I thought this was, I don't know if you agree with me, but I thought that was a beautiful piyut. And if somebody wants to say it after the regular, after Musaf is over, and go to the shul and announce it or do whatever you want. I don't recommend if you tell the Shliach Tzibur in your shul to say it, you'd probably cause a riot. But anyways, okay, so let's just quickly review. We talked about the importance of water. Water, Sukkos is the Yom HaDin, the real Yom HaDin. Bechag nidonim al ha'mayim, because water is the most important thing for life everywhere. So, and that's the greatest reward. Vayam Shemo, we'll get water. We discussed Mashi Varuch v'tein tal matar Sukkos is more or less the time of rain. We don't really want rain till Cheshvan. We're not going to pray for rain until the travelers all go home, because it's not nice to tell somebody to come to the temple and bite their nose, and then they pray that it should rain when they get soaked on the way home. Beautiful idea. Yontif is a time of judgment. That's the idea. So that's the time. Every Yontif is a time to do tshuva. And we do have prayer for Nisuach HaMayim, and the Hoshanah is referring to water. And then we basically went through Tefillah Geshem, which I find fascinating that so many of the Sidurim don't even discuss it. I don't really know why. But anyways, and we go through, it's Rav Elezer HaKalir, alphabetical acrostic, of course, and then Mayim is the key word. Unlike Tal, which is a backward alphabetical acrostic, we go through six of their great biblical figures, Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, and, well, I guess, and B'nai Israel, and all the references to the water and the wonderful thing, how God saved them to water, how they follow God like water, blood spilling like water, unfortunately, whatever. But this is the important prayer. It's hard living in Canada to, you know, to have a lot of kavana to pray for water. It's easier, like everything. It's easier, you know, it's easy to pray for health in a pandemic. When everybody's healthy, it's harder. It's good. It's good that it's harder, but it's, you know, so it's a little hard in Canada to pray for rain. It's even hard in Israel today, Baruch Hashem, because Israel, Baruch Hashem, is the world's superpower in water technology. That's another thing. It's not a problem, right? What do you mean? We don't need to follow mitzvot. We can desalinate the water. Israel, I hear Israel recycles, I don't know, 85% of its water. When I was at a recycling plant a few years ago, about 5 years ago, and Israel went to a recycling plant, water. It was a very fascinating tour. So I think they told that Israel recycles like 85% of their water. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. The next country in the world was Spain. They were the second leading country. They recycled about 25% of their water. So I think somebody can check the numbers, but it was something like, I said, wow, that's like Wayne Gretzky. Like, he scored 92 goals and the next guy scored, you know, 48. Like, it's not like, you know, Israel does 85 and they do 78. This is like they're in a different stratosphere when it comes to this with water. So Israel is the world's superpower in water. So we don't need God anymore. Okay. So we don't need God anymore. I mean, I don't mean it that way, but yeah, that's a Jewish tradition. It says, it'll be painful to have children because of Chavanu. So we come up with all ways to make it less painful to have children. Baruch Hashem, that's fine. That's our theology, that we're allowed to interfere with God, so to speak. But that's just interesting. Israel, Baruch Hashem, today, to repair. So it does make it a little bit hard, perhaps, to pray for rain, but it's okay. We should do the best we can. And then whatever, I like the idea. And then men and women, it's a joint group. Okay, just let me see if there are any quick questions. In my synagogue, everybody comes back for a community. Yeah, so what they do in our shul is they do the community yisker before. So that's the compromise a lot of shuls have done. They say tefillah, a yisker for the Israeli soldiers, the Holocaust, and then everybody leaves, like in the middle of yisker. So I don't know. I guess we say the whole thing. Okay, that's better than nothing. If they come back, half the people don't come back because everybody comes back late. They're in the middle of a conversation. They don't know exactly when they're starting. You know it goes. They go to shul. They don't all come back. And depending on who davens, yisker can take 2.5 minutes or 15 minutes, you know, depends. Okay, I remember that decades ago, Rabbi Foreman, is he still living, or did I hear he passed away recently? Tova, do you know Rabbi Foreman? Anybody know Rabbi Foreman? Rabbi Foreman was, his son was in my class in Associated in grade 5, and then they made Aliyah. He was the rabbi at Sher Shemaim. That and the Beta, the two big Orthodox shuls in Toronto. Mark Drach used to be rabbi at Sher Shemaim. Chaim Strachler just came to Renat, and Tinek was rabbi at Sher Shemaim. Tried to get people with parents to stay in shul during Yitzchak. He wasn't successful. Yeah, people, you know, I expect not to be successful. Right. Chabad doesn't lane. Okay. Somebody wants a copy. Sure. So if maybe, okay. If you want a copy, try to send me an email, because I don't like, once I close this list like this, I don't have copies of what you send me. So I'll forget, but I'll try to remember. But try to send me an email. And Open Avenue stays in for the public. Yeah, that's what everybody does. Right. And then they use for the Iskra. Okay. But they're trying to get everybody to stay in. Okay. I want to wish everybody Shabbat Shalom.
Rabbi Kelman, if you have a minute, this is Judy Sokolow. Thank you for reading that piyut.
Okay.
Yehuda Mirsky, you might know, is my husband's first cousin.
I don't know if I think now that you mentioned it, maybe I once knew that. Yehuda Mirsky is an amazing guy. He was in YU.
Yes, he was
like a super intellectual. He was Tova, just people don't know. He was Chavruta of Yitzkertz, Aleva Shalom, in Gush. So that tells you something. Yitzkertz was a classmate of mine. Unfortunately, passed away. Brilliant doesn't begin to describe who he was. He knew as much as any Rosh Hashiach, whatever. Anyway, so him and Yehuda Mirsky were chavrusas in Gush.
Anyway, he's married to a woman named Tamar Biala, who's
correct.
Feminist.
So she does modern piyut. I know that.
And you know they're Shuni. Okay, they're not.
I know. I don't have the book. Right. Thank you. Yeah. Why don't you tell everybody about
it? Just translated into English.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Yes.
Yeah, so right. Tamar Biali, I haven't met Yehuda's wife because whatever. I mean, he's been to our house. I've had Yehuda, but right. So she writes piyut. That's correct. I'm not.
No, midrashim.
I'm sorry.
They're midrashim.
Oh, midrashim. She writes midrashim. Well, she writes midrashim.
She and other people. She edited two volumes of midrashim. She and other women have written midrashim. These are women who know classical midrashim, and they write them in the style of the classical midrashim.
Right. Right.
Usually, you know, like what was Sarah doing during the Akedah, you know, that kind of thing, you know.
Right.
They bring up the woman side of it. And depending upon your outlook and your taste or whatever,
right,
you know, some people, as you say, would scream and yell, and other people.
Rabbi Lezer Kalir was screamed and yelled at too, so it's okay. And the Rambam was screamed and yelled at too. It's okay. Being screamed and yelled at, that's the Jewish way. You have thick shoulders. You do what's right. We were open up a page of Talmud. Hillel and Beit Shammai screamed at each other and Abayin Rava. That's the way of our way of life. It should be not personal. There's a beautiful idea, right? Gemara says when two people learn together, it's oyev and ohev. Oyvim, I forget the pasuk they quote. I should know the pasuk. I just can't remember offhand. And the pasuk says oyev and altikra oyev ela ohev. Right, that when we learn, we should be like enemy. Oh, you say that? No, the idea of learning is how can I be constructed? The idea of learning, right? When Reish Lakish died, Rav Yochanan basically had a mental breakdown, had no one to learn with. There was no one to question him. So they sent him Rav Elezer ben Pedat, so whatever, I think so. Whatever Rav Yochanan said, Rav Elezer, yeah, you're right. So Rav Yochanan says, I don't need you to tell me I'm right. I know I'm right. I don't need you to tell me. Whenever I said something, Reish Lakish would ask me 24 questions. And give me 24. That's who I need. And they couldn't find anybody. So he went crazy. He had a mental breakdown. That's what the Gemara says. And they prayed he should die. And he died. That was it. He couldn't live with the Chavrusa, just, you know, yeah, we have to be continued. So you're enemies with each other, but then you become Ohavim. Then we become love. Okay, I understand that's not the same, because unfortunately, when I'm talking about the Rambam, this is not that type of, you know, the way it should be. A lot of those fights weren't good. I know it's not the same, but the idea is, unfortunately, whatever, anybody who has a little bit of controversial ideas gets attacked. And unfortunately, I remember my first year in Yeshiva University, I think it was Professor Steve Bain. I think he works for one of the, he was like a young professor. I had him for Jewish history. I remember a comment he made all these years. It sticks with me. He says, in the Orthodox world, much more important than what somebody says is who says it. And that's not the approach of the Rambam. Who said, like, if Greg Gadol says it, people accept it. And even if it doesn't make sense. And if a young guy says it, it's controversial, they go crazy. And it's a little sad. I mean, there is something to who says it. I agree, if experts, but so Kabel, as the Rambam says, Kabel amem mishamro. It doesn't matter who says it. If it's good, we like it. So, anyways, okay. Any other comments? I'm sorry, but all right. Judy, your husband told me he writes piyut. He sent me a couple of piyutim yesterday.
Yes,
your husband writes piyut. And then he told me I don't know who he is. He told me the world's expert is Shulamit Elitzur. from the famous Elitzur family in Israel. But I looked her up online. I couldn't find any recordings. He doesn't know and I don't know. And I asked Yehuda Mirsky, what's her English like? I have no idea. So if anybody knows, you can let me know. But apparently she's the world's expert. She's from women teachers at Hebrew U. Her father-in-law, I guess, won the Chidon HaTanach. It's a well-known family, I think, in the field of Tanakh. Anyways, okay, I'll let people go. All right, thank you. And anyways, please, God, next week we'll be back to our regular Hallelujah, regular Psuke de Zimra. I don't know if it's going to get out today. We're still working on it. But if you look on the website already, you can see our fall programming. We're just putting together like an email. I think we have 9 at least working on a couple more. So our fall programming next week, we'll have the Parsha Shir at night. Please go out there. And then I'll give the Shir on Friday. And then the following week, like, we'll start most of our Shirim, and some are going to start the week after that. So you can take a look on the website. Some of our upcoming classes, and I just want to wish everybody Chag Sameach, and this be a lure of good rain and all good things and all brachot. Okay,
thank
everybody.
You very much. Good Shabbos, good Yom Tov.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Chag Sameach, Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Chag Sameach. Thank you.
Shabbat Shalom.
Good Shabbos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta go.